Blog Talk Radio.
Playing Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah.
Back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the rise.
Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs,
Yes, Lord, we got a brand new present. What? Joe Biden, we riding, I pray you heaven sent. Word from the wise, my people stay ahead of me.
Come on,
I've been relevant, trying to survive the elements. It ain't no love in these streets, these dudes telling it. Case go from cold to hot, state evidence. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
What's going on, Sports City? Mike Harvey here with you on a Tuesday night. I think I got the villain alongside. Villain, are you with me?
Villain in the house. What's going on, Mr. Harvey?
Hey, man, it's always a pleasure to tag team with you and get some things done. Sirius had some other obligations tonight, so I'll see if I can. It's a tall task, man, taller than Yao Ming. But I'm going to see if I can fill in and at least do a passable job in his absence, man. But thank you for being alongside, as always, my friend. It's always fun to chop it up with you. I look forward to the next, we got 60 minutes or so, talking football tonight. All right, now let me know if we got anybody else coming in real quick, man. You know, one of the things that I do miss about Tuesday nights is Sirius would get on here, and he's got this little theme music that he plays. And, man, every time I hear it, though, it's got, you know, with the bass line and everything. Now, last week it was a little bit too high. Like, I felt like it was redlining. But, you know, it's got the bass that comes in and everything. Like, I'm ready to go, so. We don't have that tonight, but we'll make it do, man. We'll make do. But real quick,
you might. You know what? I mean, listen. I don't like giving Sirius shine. You know, I really don't. It's just not something I want to do with my life. You know what I mean? But listen. Well, you know, we got a little serious music. I don't know if this is the right one, but the villain will test it out. Here we go.
Let's see. I think this is it. I'll tell you. Yeah, that's it. Let it go. Let it go. Here we go.
Ready to go.
That's it. I need. Now I'm ready. Now I'm ready, man. Free for all. Let's go. Like, gloves off. Let's ride. So, welcome in, Sports City. For the next 58 minutes or so, you got me and the villain. 929-477-2759 is our call-in number. Feel free to call in, jump in on any topics that we're going to serve up for you tonight. And real quick, shout out to the Tommy TP Timeless. Wasn't him, I wouldn't be here. None of us would be, man. He's the head honcho of this thing, man. So much love to the main chef, TP, and man, to the other chefs out there. And don't forget, man, PHI Apparel, phiapparel.co. Listen, they got all kinds of innovative designs. You know, Philly going to the Super Bowl this weekend, much to Villain's delight. So you got pitchers and catchers reporting next week. You know, the defending National League pennant winners. Oh, that just breaks my heart to say it. But these guys, Philly's kind of hot right now in the sporting world. So that should mean that PHI Apparel business should be picking up. So check them out, man. Use the promo code CHEF at checkout and get yourself 15% off on any of your Philly sports clothing needs. And if you want to be like villain, you can just burn it. But otherwise, check them out. PHIapparel.co. Got all your Philly clothing needs for you or for anybody that you might know is a Philly fan. You know, you feel like doing something nice. Anybody out there got any loved ones they really care about? Listen, Valentine's Day is coming up, man. Birthday, spring, anything. So check out your Philly clothes right there. I will never own any of it myself, but hey, that's okay.
They pay the bills, so shout out to those boys.
Yeah, we appreciate PHI Apparel, man. Like, much appreciate. They've been with us for a little while now, right?
Almost a
year now, right? Yeah,
yeah.
So we definitely appreciate those guys. Yeah, we definitely appreciate those guys. So, and then of course Blog Talk Radio, right? So, Villain, we got a lot of stuff to get into tonight, man. I'm excited, but the very first thing that I want to hear your thoughts on, because, you know, I have some, but I feel like when it comes to this topic, I try to sit back and listen more than I speak. And so just kind of set this up for you, if you don't mind. 35 years ago, bro, we had ever black quarterback to win a Super Bowl in Doug Williams. Mm-hmm. Grambling University came in. Had over 300 yards passing, led the Redskins to a Super Bowl, right? This is in my lifetime, which is hard to imagine. But in my lifetime, we had the first black quarterback lead a team to a Super Bowl championship. Seen a couple other ones since, but now, 35 years later, we obviously are starting to see more and more black quarterbacks in this league, thankfully. But for the first time ever, we are going to have two black quarterbacks opposing each other in the Super Bowl. So both of them, black quarterbacks. Just your thoughts, Villain, on, like, what does this mean, like, to you or for history or whatever? Like, how big a moment is this? I just want to hear your thoughts on that.
I mean, in Black History Month and with everything that's gone on, it's huge, man. It can't be understated. I mean, I know a lot of people that, you know, really don't want to give it shine or, you know, closet haters or closet racists, whatever you want to call it, you know, roll their eyes when they say it, but it needs to be said. You know what I mean? Nobody bats an eye when you say, oh, two white quarterbacks starting in the Super Bowl. Hopefully we get more like that. We get a Hispanic quarterback in there. You get, you know, more diversity in the league, but it's monumental. I mean, we've had black quarterbacks play in the Super Bowl, obviously, but this is the first time, you know, it's both. And it's huge. It's huge. We got a long way to go. It's still a league that's owned by a majority of white men. You have one minority owner in Jacksonville, but there's not a lot of them. Right. And then, you know, the coaching is still, you know, predominantly white men. You have female coaches coming through the ranks, which is a beautiful thing. But, you know, it's still that hierarchy where the, you know, the quote unquote field hands are the black players, but the guys running the show are white men. Let's be completely honest. So it's a long way to go. But this is a huge moment that I hope people, you know, don't take lightly, that they understand that it is big and it does need to get shined on and people need to acknowledge it and celebrate it.
And I definitely appreciate you saying that. And to me, like, that's why I wanted to lead off tonight with this topic, because of the importance of it, right? Like, to me, I read different comments, and I want to kind of tell a little bit about things I've read, but also a little bit about what I know about each quarterback. I kind of want to highlight both of them just a little bit, kind of hear you. Mm-hmm. Your commentary on some of this as well. But I was listening to or reading about some of Jalen Hurts' comments last night. And so this guy, Jalen Hurts is a very, very smart kid. Like, I think,
you know,
before
you go into it, it's annoying how smart and how bright and how articulate and how he's just a likable guy. Like, you want to, you know, as a Giant fan going, you want to hate this guy, but, like, everything about him, he's, like, he says the right things, coaches kid. Like, this, I love the kid. I really do.
And so one of the things that he said last night that really jumped out to me is he's like, obviously this is historic. And obviously he said, obviously it's huge and it's special. But he said, I don't know that this has really set in on me yet. You know, and so for him, even in the moment, to say, I'm not sure that the importance of this and just how powerful it is has really set in on me yet. And he said, maybe, after the fact or when I have a chance to really go back and put it more so in perspective, then it'll dawn on me. And he's like, that doesn't mean that I'm oblivious to the importance of it. But I like that he was able to step back and just be like, you know what? I'm not real 100% sure that I really grasp the whole scope of it yet. And he's honest enough to be able to point that out. So
right.
I want to start with Jalen Hurts. So, and just tell a couple little things about him that really jumps out to me and just kind of lay a little bit of history on him. So Jalen Hurts, man, coach's kid, comes out of Texas, goes to Alabama. The kid's 26-2 as a starter in college at Alabama, right? A magnificent first 2 years. Now, they're struggling to move the ball in the championship game. So they're down. And people say what they want to about Nick Saban. That took a lot of guts to pull the guy and bring a freshman in in the second half. But it worked, right? So they come back, they win the game, and people remember the throw that Tua made to Devontae Smith in the end zone right after taking a sack. A lot of people may not remember the sack right before it, but they're like 3rd and 17 or something from like the 42-yard line. He throws a rope into the end zone for a touchdown. They win the game. And you know who the first person over to Tua was right after it happened? Jalen Hurts. The next year, Jalen stays, competes for the job. He gets beat out by Tua. Jalen could have hit his head in the sand. Jalen could have, been a malcontent, but he wasn't. He worked with Tua that year. They studied film together. They worked on things. Now, Jalen knew that Tua was going to be there past that year, so he knew he was probably going to transfer after that season when he didn't win that job. But Jalen comes in and bails him out in the conference championship game that next year. He bailed Tua out, and they were able to beat Georgia and, advance on to the playoffs. And a lot of it was because of the contributions that he made in that game. And how many times do we see a kid that, like, as soon as they don't win a job or whatever, they hit the portal or they kind of checked out. But coach's kid, not necessarily going to do that. So then – I posted about this earlier in the week. The story about how he ended up going to Oklahoma. Barry, I'm not sure if you saw this or not. So he was looking at going to Oklahoma. He was looking at going to Maryland because their defensive coordinator had moved to Maryland. And he was looking at possibly going to Miami. And he sat down with Nick Saban. And Nick Saban talked to him about, like, listen, you can make plays with your legs. What I want you to continue to work on in order to be good at the next level is continue working through those progressions and continue working on your decision-making and knowing, what throws to make and when. So they have a conversation about where he could possibly go. And Jalen talked about Miami, and he talked about Maryland. And then he talked about the possibility of going to Oklahoma. And Nick Saban really pushed him to go to Oklahoma because he told him, go where you're going to have the better players. So he goes to Oklahoma. He's got CeeDee Lamb. He's got legitimate threats. And Jalen Hurts had a remarkable season at Oklahoma that year. Let's not make any mistake about it. Now, Oklahoma couldn't play defense, and that's what was their undoing in the semifinals. LSU blew their doors off. But it wasn't Jalen Hurts' fault. He didn't play on that side of the ball. But if it wasn't for the historic season that Joe Burrow had that season, Jalen Hurts would have very possibly won the Heisman. He had a remarkable year at Oklahoma. And that was what caused the Eagles to take him. And then, so knowing that Saban, even though he was leaving his program, and listen, I'm not doing this to hype up Nick Saban or anything, but knowing that he was going to leave his program, knowing that Nick Saban really genuinely wanted what was best for the kids' development was kind of cool to hear, right? And then one more piece of this story is I read Dallas Goedert and a couple players talked about, you got to remember, like right after this draft, COVID happened, or before the draft, COVID happened, but facilities were closed. So everything was kind of virtual until they actually got to camp in the fall. Right. Mm-hmm. And they had just made this commitment to Wentz. But Dallas Goedert and a couple other guys said that Jalen Hurts just kept making plays. And people were like, well, he's not going to be able to do that with his feet in a game. Well, he did. But a lot of the players said that even watching him on the practice field, they knew there was something really special, you know, about this kid and that he was going to make something of himself. And shout out to the Eagles organization, man, because there was talk before the season, is he going to be that guy? Or, you know, how short is this leash going to be? This is his one prove-it year. But they did the one thing that we've been screaming for other organizations to do for their young quarterbacks. They went out and got this guy another weapon, right? They go get him A.J. Brown to go along with Devontae Smith. Now he's got some legit weapons on the outside to really aid him in his development, and he's taken a huge, huge step forward this year. You know, that's just kind of my cool background on Jalen Hurts. Anything you want to add to that or comments on that or anything else
I think, Mike, what you have to kind of put into context is how he came to Philly, right? Like, he was drafted, what, in the second round or what have you. But Carson Wentz was there, right? Carson Wentz was in company, were in tow. And they felt like this kid, they said, second overall pick, Carson Wentz, or in the top five at least. They said, you know what, we don't need you. Yeah, we're going to move on from you. We're going to go with Jalen Hurts. That's a lot of confidence and faith in this kid that nobody was really – they knew he was good at Oklahoma and Alabama. They didn't know he was this good. They didn't think he would, like, be this good. And that was a risk. And then he slowly started to pay that off in the second half of the second year and got them into the playoffs when nobody thought they were a playoff team. We thought maybe they could take a couple steps forward. Maybe they can get out of the first round, blah, 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 in a year or two. They went and, you know, they had a really good defense. They added Bradbury on the defensive side, which was huge. They added A.J. Brown after they drafted Devontae Smith. I think Devontae Smith is better as a number two than he is a number one. He's flourished. They already had Goddard at tight end. They had Miles Sanders at running back. So now he's got all the weapons. And look, man, the Eagles, every move that they did in the offseason has paid off. And every move that they've made since they basically drafted this kid, right, since they drafted Hurts, has been a hit. And Howie Roseman gets a lot of flack sometimes, but there's nothing that he's done in the last two or three years that has been wrong. And when your GM hits on – it's like in the draft. If you hit on half of your draft, you had a pretty good draft. He's hit on pretty much everything in the draft, everything in free agency. He's done it right, and this is why they are arguably the best team in the NFL, and they can position themselves to get their second Super Bowl and maybe more to come.
Yeah, this is, you know, I look at this, and it, you just want to beat, like, organizations like Baltimore over the head and be like, why can't you even attempt this, right? Like,
yeah.
Why can't you really try to do things to help your guy flourish, right? But I look
they
at
don't
this,
want to.
Just,
they don't want to. Either you do or you don't. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Seriously, like either you do or you don't, and they have done nothing. They have asked this kid, Lamar Jackson, I hate to sidetrack, but they've asked him to do more with less. Like any other quarterback, Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes, you know, Josh Allen needed a receiver. They got Stephon Diggs. Like, Justin Herbert needed help. They got him help. Any quarterback, like Justin Fields, like, give me a break. They went and got some pieces, and now he might be positioned to move forward. It's like they've asked this kid that's got an MVP to do less, do more with less. It's disrespectful. Like, look at what your boy Burrow has to work with. You know what I mean? He came in his first year. All right, that struggled a little bit. What did they do? They got Ja'Marr Chase. What did they do the second year? They built that offensive line. They've given him everything they needed to position themselves to be one of the top teams in the AFC. Lamar Jackson has gotten nothing. Nothing. It's a joke. It's sad.
Yeah, like I said, I'm happy for Jalen. I'm happy to see him have some success at this. And, you know, I'm just happy for the kid, right? And then, you know, switching gears, like, this is a fun thing for me. So Pat Mahomes comes out of Texas Tech, and reading stories on him, like, obviously his father – a major league pitcher, kind of a relief guy, but was a really good hand. I remember one year with the Mets. I believe he even finished like 10-0 or something. Like he didn't lose that year. But he was a solid big league player for years. Pat Mahomes played basketball, was good. Played baseball. He could throw. He was hitting 96, 98 miles an hour in high school. Threw a 16 strikeout no hitter once in high school. And was a legit outfielder, too. Like, he could have been drafted very high as an outfielder in baseball. And the story I was reading today talked about how when he first went out to try football for the first time, he just fell in love with it, right? Like, all the intricacies of the game. And, you know, Pat Mahomes, once again, another smart kid. He's got a photographic memory. He's really smart. He just enjoyed all the intricacies of the game. And then you think about it, like, in the state of Texas, you might have 100, 200 people at a high school baseball game. But high school football, oh, man. In that state, they pack those high school stadiums out. And some of those high school stadiums will rival some of your smaller college facilities easily. Like, you know, there's a reason why they made a whole movie and a show about just high school football in that state. It's the real deal in that state, in the state of Texas, right? So Mahomes goes to college, makes a lot of throws that other people can't make even at the college level. But I think that one of the reasons why a few teams kind of overlooked him was because he was in that Texas Tech system under Cliff Kingsbury. And that sort of you know, air raid type offense. So it's kind of gimmicky, and people are wondering, can he do it at this next level? Well, there were some people that were convinced that he could. For his sake, I'm glad that Ryan Pace and the Chicago Bears didn't realize it, and they took Mitchell Trubisky, because that would – I mean, listen, he still would have been good, but obviously going to Andy Reid – and Kansas City is a match made in heaven for him, right? And the results are quite clear. I mean, this is the third time in 5 years, third time in 4 years that he's been to the Super Bowl. In his first 5 years as a starter, he's been to the conference championship game every single season. You know, this guy is on a trajectory, if he can maintain it, to one day be talked about as one of the best ever at this position. Now, that's premature right now because we're still pretty young in his career. But, you know, you just look at what he's done so far. And he's, you know, he's surpassed all expectations. Sean Payton and the Saints really liked him. As a matter of fact, they worked him out. And the story goes, Drew Brees showed up at the building the night of the draft, and they even told Drew Brees, we got one more pick, and if this guy's still here, we're drafting him. Like, they told Drew Brees. And Andy Reid jumped over them and traded places with Cincinnati right before the Saints could get the pick. And so the Saints ended up having to go a different direction. But the Saints really wanted him. But what he's been able to do in his career, and it's funny, so his godfather is LaTroy Hawkins.
Yep.
So LaTroy Hawkins and Pat Mahomes, obviously really close. He was best man at his wedding or whatever. Told the story, asked him to be his godfather. And so the whole story with the I hate that the Cincinnati mayor shot off his mouth to the extent that he did, because it looks bad on Joe Burrow. But he didn't really do it when they were calling it Burrowhead and all this kind of stuff. And so the story goes, Pat Mahomes had a cigar in the stadium and lit it up right after they won.
Yeah.
And he tried to convince Patrick to do the same, but, you know, Pat's not going to do that. He can just point up at the scoreboard. But then the story goes, LaTroy Hawkins went and bought a Black and Mild and sat outside in 5-degree temperature, and he videoed this on his cell phone, lighting up the Black and Mild, blowing out the smoke, and as soon as the smoke cleared the air, he said, Burrowhead my ass. Like, and so
that's right.
They're going to, they're both going to be there to celebrate and be there, to see Mahomes play this weekend. But another guy that, like, in a lot of ways defied some expectations. That a few people saw it, Andy Reid saw it, Sean Payton saw it, but a lot of people didn't see Mahomes turning into this guy. To me, football player, sure, but to me, this guy, I've said this multiple times, best quarterback in the league. And right now, nobody's even on the same floor. You know, he's got the penthouse, bro, and nobody even has access to the elevator to go all the way up there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when he came out of Texas Tech, there was, you saw some things, but you didn't know about him. You probably started to hear more about him during the draft process, but there's so many immeasurables with this kid that you just didn't see. You might have seen a little bit on tape, but you didn't see it to this extent. And give Andy Reid credit. He said he's not ready. He's not playing year one. He had Alex Smith there in tow, and he played, and Mahomes did not play his rookie year. But you knew the second year that he had to play. You saw him in the preseason, what have you, and like, wow. It was like, wow. There's something here, and he took off like a rocket. He's the best quarterback. He should win the MVP this year, well deserved. I mean, it was a lot of the talk was how was he going to play this year without Tariq Hill? Like, everybody kind of assumed Tariq Hill made Mahomes, and Tariq Hill is an exceptional talent. Don't get me wrong, but he just kind of proved the haters wrong. Like, if you thought that one receiver made me, you're out of your mind. And he's still on that trajectory. Listen, I think he has to win this Super Bowl. I was watching some TV and listening to some people on radio and stuff like that. And, you know, they were saying, like, he doesn't have to win. He'll get back to another Super Bowl. Like, listen, it ain't guaranteed, man. Just because you saw Tom Brady make it, you know, almost half of his career to a Super Bowl, that's the anomaly. Like, Dan Marino said the same thing after his Super Bowl walloping by the 49ers, and he never made it back to the Super Bowl. You cannot take these opportunities for granted. He's been to three Super Bowls now. He's been to five straight conference championships. That's not a given. Like, you know what I mean, Mike? Like, it's hard to get there. It's hard to get there every year, and it's hard to get there throughout your whole career. You know, like, Aaron Rodgers made it to three straight or what have you, and he might not make it to another one. Who knows? So you got to take advantage when you're there, man. You got to take advantage when you're there.
929-477-2759, the number if you want to call in and join us. The Troy Hawkins said, I don't know if he's ever lost the same team three times in his life. What a competitor! What a competitor Mahomes is, and I said this that Sunday morning, with Timeless on the Timeless Sunday Morning Brunch, shameless plug. That regardless of what I thought on the previous week or whatever, I said when I predicted Kansas City, I said Mahomes has been is tired of hearing this. Mm-hmm. He's heard this talk about can he get over Cincinnati and this kind of thing. And I was like, he's going to find a way to get it done. And he did on a bad mm-hmm. angle. He saved that last little run. Like, listen, he was having trouble moving all day. But you know what? When they really needed it, this man extended a drive and ran for a first down, right? Like, and continued things. The two things that I wanted to say, that was one. But then the second thing that really jumps out to me is, Let's get away from this idea. There's all this thought about, well, first round draft pick has to play. You know, this idea yeah. of having them wait is a thing of the past now. No, man, this was just 6 years ago now. This guy was drafted in the first round, like 13th, 14th pick, whatever. And mm-hmm. Andy Reid did develop him for a year, and he did it the right way. And so this was a perfect marriage, if you will. Football marriage for Mahomes and for Andy Reid. We've talked about before, coaches' staying power has a lot to do with whether or not you get a franchise quarterback, right? Looking at this, this is a exhibit A of how you can still be a first-round draft pick and you can sit for a year and it still pay long-term dividends for your team. So, we always want to see these guys come out and play. And I think we are starting to see more and more guys play in their first year. And I think deservedly so, because I think the passing games and the concepts that are in the college game now are more advanced than they were, you know, when we were growing up, right? So some of these guys are more NFL ready when they first come in. But in certain situations, you can still benefit from having that year to sit and learn and develop. And, you know, this is a classic example of that. So switching gears.
Can I ask you something real quick, Mike, and then we can move forward. So obviously, like, a lot of big news was, like, you know, especially with Brady retiring and Mahomes and the quarterbacks of all time and you know, Dan Orlovsky from ESPN had Mahomes in the top five. He had him at number two. I mean, I just want to get your quick take on that. I know I got a take, but what's your take on that?
I think that at this point in his career, I think that number two is a little bold. I think that he is clear cut, as I said, best quarterback in the game right now. But five conference championship games in 5 years, now three Super Bowls in 4 years. If he finds a way to win this one too, because I'm not sure that he's playing on the most complete team that's in the Super Bowl, to be quite honest with you. I think that the more complete team is on the opposite sideline. To be quite honest with you, going into this thing, I'm going to break it down some more as the week sort of evolves. But I don't know that top five all time is a stretch, but number two I think is. I just think, listen, man, the eye test even tells you this guy can make some throws and do some things that I don't know that we've really seen done on a football field, right? So. You know, definitely in my top 10 of all time, maybe my top five if I really think about it. But it's hard right now to put him over Joe Montana, even though.
He didn't have Joe Montana in his top five. I mean, that's just disgraceful as it is.
That Dan Orlovsky, even though he played the quarterback position, is a clown, man. Like, I hate to say it, but like just some of his takes drive me crazy. And I think that sometimes he says things just to get attention, because he was also at one point just a few weeks ago trying to put Burrow on the same plane as Mahomes. And and you know me, Barry, I like Joe Burrow a lot. I'm gonna put him ahead. And I think sometimes Dan Orlovsky says stuff so we can talk about it, right? So it can be talked about. Clickbait. That's what I would say.
Right. And it was disgusting because it's like in the first vein when he unleashed this top five, he said, Dan Marino's top five. I've never seen him play, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, everybody said he's a pure court, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes to, they asked him, why didn't Jeff Montana play? I never saw him play.
Huh?
So you never saw Dan Marino play, but you have him in your top five. But you never saw Joe Montana, who everybody said was the GOAT until Tom Brady passed him. Like, come on, man. Like, it's like, and to be honest with you, I don't have Mahomes in my top five. He will be in the top five if he keeps on this trajectory and when he retires, right? If he retired today, he's a borderline Hall of Famer. If he gets the second one, I would push him in. But right now, he's borderline. Like, he doesn't have the stats. He has stats, but he doesn't have stats that are comparable, right, to other people in his era because he didn't play long enough. But he will be top five when he retires if he keeps going. There's no question about it, right? His accolades don't even add up to Joe Montana's. Like, Burrow, not even remember, Mahomes has one MVP. Montana has two. Montana has three Super Bowl MVPs. Mahomes has what, one? Montana has four Super Bowl. Mahomes has one. So it's like it doesn't add up. You know what I'm saying? Like, Montana doesn't have the passing yards and all that stuff, but it's like it was a different era. You didn't pass as much back then. So it's just like respect to these guys. Like, I don't understand why people don't put Bradshaw in the top five or ten. Like, I could say maybe not top five, but, like, from Bradshaw's name. Like, the guy won four Super Bowls, and the last two were because it was a passing offense. Like, guys like him, like, Bart Starr is a winner. You know what I mean? Like, Peyton Manning is in my top five. But it's just like my top five is different than a lot of people's. But it drives me crazy that they have, you know, these, you know, I can't even get into it, but yeah, I had to touch on that. Montana's number two all time.
Well, and to me, you know, this is a classic case, Barry, of prisoner of the moment, right?
Like, right.
And I think we see a lot of that. So there's a couple of comments that I read over the last couple of weeks. One is kind of closer to the Super Bowl, and then just a couple comments that were made about from current coaches in the NFL. So I'm going to go to your G-men, and you got a safety kid from Notre Dame, Julian Love, is that his name?
Yeah.
So he comes out last week and says, I don't think that Nick Sirianni is a great coach. He said he stays out of these guys' way because they got a really complete roster. But it's almost like he was trying to give him a backhanded comment and say the reason why they're so good is because he just kind of stays out of their way. So he was, and maybe part of that sort of division, you know, haterade going on. But he was, I felt like he was kind of very critical of Sirianni. Did you see these comments at all?
I did, and I just ignored it. Like, it's like between him and, like, what Kayvon Thibodeau was saying, like, dude, you guys need to shut up. You know what I mean? Like, you went to the playoffs, you win one playoff game, and now you're feeling yourself. Like, it's funny to me. Like, get a hold, man. Get a hold of yourself. Like Kayvon Thibodeau talking about, oh, you know, the way this 49er-Eagles game is going, we could have played bad. Like, did you not see the game that y'all played against them last week? You think you're better than the 49ers right now? Like, are you kidding me right now? Yeah, right? Like, come on, man. Like, so, listen, like, thanks for the memories, but pause. Like, let's keep it real. Sirianni deserves a lot of credit, man. Like, don't disrespect these coaches and what they have. You're not in the building. You don't know what they have to deal with. You don't know what they put up with. All you know is what you see, man. Like, the Eagles, you know, they shouldn't have let Doug Peterson go, but before that they had some garbage coaches coming in and out of there that, you know, couldn't get the job done. And Sirianni, his first year, I know, I was on shows with Eagles fans are talking to 215, the guys in Philly, in the Philly podcast. Like, they were ready to get rid of it. They didn't want Sirianni. They hated him. They hated Hurts. They didn't think he was a good quarterback. By the end of the season when they were in the playoffs, they were all loving Sirianni. They were like, oh, let's give him a chance. They thought, Hurts, oh, maybe if we do some things, maybe we should keep him. And now all these guys are talking about they love these guys from the get-go. Like, you know what I mean? It's so phony. But, listen, Sirianni is a good coach, man. He's not coach of the year. I think Dable is. But, like, give these guys their flowers, man. You don't want anybody disrespecting you, you know, after, you know, you have a good year and people think you're a scrub, man. You don't want that.
So 929-477-2759, the villain and I are locked and loaded with you for the next 20 minutes or so. Now, there's another comment that were made last night that really jumps out to me, made by Darius Slay. These comments were about Matt Patricia. And I mentioned this because, you know, our head honcho is a Lions fan, and he had to suffer through Matt Patricia. In Detroit, we know that Darius Slay was in Detroit for a while before he ended up with the Eagles. So his comments, did you see these comments that he had about Matt Patricia?
No, I did not.
Okay, so what he said was, he said two things. He worked out in the off season leading up to that first year with Richard Sherman and Akeem Tlaib, two fantastic corners at the time, right? Matt Patricia, this clown, I feel like I'm calling people clowns more because of my time with Chandler, but Matt Patricia basically tells Darius Slay, you're not on those guys' level yet. You shouldn't be working out with those guys. I'm like, what? Are you serious? Like, why would you not want a guy, even if he's not on that level, why would you not want a guy working out with some of the best at the position to try to get better or pick up tips and tricks? Like, that to me is crazy. And then I'm going to give you the follow-up to that in a second. But the other thing he said was, well, at the time he had one Pro Bowl, and he made another one, and now he's been a Pro Bowl, or, you know, he's been all pro, whatever, the last 3 years or whatever. He's like, I wonder if he thinks I'm on their level now that I've been voted on that, you know, that I've been voted like a Pro Bowl corner for five times now. I wonder if he would think that I have the right to work out with these guys now. But the other thing that he said was that Patricia came in and felt like entitled. And it's almost like he came in with a I'm better than all y'all kind of thing, really talking down to guys like they're lucky to be here, that kind of thing. And he was like, remember, guy, like we were drafted here. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't always get a say on where you're going to play. But reading those comments, like, no wonder he didn't last. And no wonder if Bill Belichick was entrusting him to have a hand in running the offense, no wonder that offense was in shambles. He's not a guy that I really had a ton of respect for beforehand, but just to hear kind of Darius Slay come out when given that platform and say this to me is a different example of what we were just talking about. You know, with Julian Love, we're talking about, you know, throwing shade when you really don't have any business doing so. But I think in this example, this is a guy that really felt like the coach did not treat them very well and almost discouraged somebody from really trying to grow unless he had a hand in it or whatever. And so in this kind of situation, I think that this is okay. I mean, I think for him to kind of shed some light on that situation, I don't really take issue with that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, I like what he said. He did talk to USA Today, and reading what he said, you know, he's like, he basically just said, you're not in that category yet. At the time, I only had one Pro Bowl, but now I'm at five, so I don't know how he feels about that now. I don't wish any bad on him, but as a man, me and him just didn't get along. He's a smart coach. He knows his X's and O's, but the disrespect is not where I went. So, I mean, he could have said a lot of things in that interview that came across. Well, he, you know, he kind of cleaned it up and was really professional about it. But, you know, listen, you're right. It was a difference of opinion. It was a difference of philosophies. And you know, both guys and both the teams are better off, you know, that he's not there. You know, the Eagles got two really good corners out of it. You know, the Lions, you know, moved on from him as a coach. And I think Campbell is going to be a terrific coach. He's what that city needs, you know what I mean? That city of Detroit, that kind of blue collar, you know, back to the grind kind of thing, man. I think he's a great fit, and I think they're going to be really happy for years to come. So I think at the end it all worked out. Maybe not for Matt. I mean, now he's calling offense. Now he's not calling offense, right? You know, they got O'Brien back in New England, but it's a moot point, and they moved on, and I'm glad, you know, Slay kind of took the high road on it a little bit.
Yeah, I think he could have been a lot more nasty with his comments, right? In a sense,
yeah.
And so,
right.
But at the same time, if you do it in this kind of way, you know, I appreciate the player coming out and letting it known, like, okay, this is kind of how I was treated, and this is, you know, how it came across to me. And,
yeah,
you know, I think it's okay to share that. You know, we talked about plenty of times already how, you know, you got the black field hands and then the white men that are running things or whatever. And so to be disrespected in such a way and to present it in a way that doesn't come across as trash talking or whatever. But, you know, I think that at times, I think the general public needs to see some of this, because a lot of times people always want to side with the coaches and whatever, and these players are prima donnas and all this kind of stuff. And is it the case in some situations? Sure, but not every situation, right? And so I think it's important that some light gets shed on this. The interesting thing, the last thing I'll say before, there's a couple other things I want to hit before we wrap up tonight, but Dick Vermeil and the Kelsey's mom are both in really interesting spots, because they both have serious ties to both organizations. You know, Vermeil is probably a little closer with Kansas City right now. He's set in on some of Andy Reid's stuff. You know, the Kelsey's mom, when she was asked who she was going to root for, she said the offenses, right? Which is a good answer. Oh, and
right.
Real quick, because I mentioned Kelsey, that reminded me of the other point I wanted to mention from before. You know, Kansas City made the right move, by the way. You hate to see a guy like Tariq Hill go, but, you know, Mahomes has his security blanket in Travis Kelsey. And Kelsey can run routes. He's athletic enough. And as a tight end, a lot of what you do is find spots in those zones or whatever, and Kelsey can stretch the field a little bit. But his game, if he can stay healthy, will continue to age over the next few years and help Mahomes continue to break in other guys. So love that decision for him. But, you know, it's just interesting to see how you got two brothers for the first time on opposite sidelines. We had the brothers on opposite sidelines coaching, and now we have two on the field. Just another interesting sort of storyline to follow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Real quick. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I was just going to echo that. I mean, it's really interesting. You've never really seen it before. Two really good players. Pro Bowl is at both their positions, right? And Hall of Famers, I would think, when their careers are over. Jason Kelsey, one of the best centers in the league, and Travis Kelsey, arguably one of the best tight ends ever. So it's good to be a mom. It's good to be the mom.
And you don't have to see one of your kids tackle the other one either, so that's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
So, real quick, the compensation has kind of come out. It's looking like Sean Payton is going to get like $18 million a year. He's continuing to try to poach coaches from New Orleans. You just mentioned Bill O'Brien getting hired as the offensive coordinator. in New England. So since you and I really had a chance to talk about it, there's been a few different coaching moves. Kellen Moore is now going to play Madden in L.A. instead of in Dallas now. But any thoughts on these on any of these coaching moves around the league that we haven't hashed out yet, or any of these new hires, or any thoughts on any of this that's happened over the last
couple of weeks? I think the Brian Flores hire today as a DC in Minnesota is a great hire. I think he's going to really turn that defense around that's really struggled the last few years. I think that's a terrific hire. I would love him to get a head coaching position, but you know what? It's a good fit for him. So I think this is good. I think that's a sneaky good hire. I love Sean Payton. I know you do too. But they asked him today, I think it was, or when he was introduced, about Russell Wilson. And, you know, there was a lot of stories that we didn't know that starting to come out about Russell Wilson, how he wanted separate locker rooms. He had his own personal quarterback coach and his own entourage there. It was like he was, like, given the keys to the kingdom. And Sean Payton's like, no, we're not doing that here. Like, we have our coaching staff. There ain't going to be none of that. So, basically, you know, it's like that Kendrick Lamar song, Sit Down, Be Humble. Like, you know, listen, Russell Wilson. And a lot of people have talked about, you know, his – you know, he's gotten preferential treatment where he's been in Seattle, and, you know, Beast Mode was, you know, should have got that touchdown in that Super Bowl, but they wanted Russell to get it because they wanted Russ to look like the hero and kind of all that kind of stuff. You know, Russ has kind of, you know, let Russ cook and all that kind of stuff, and he's been treated a certain way, and players like Richard Sherman's kind of rubbed him the wrong way, and now you're hearing what's happened the first year in Denver, and you see why people are saying it. And listen, your own quarterback, your own room separate from the team, like, you know, who the hell do you think you are, man? So not even Tom Brady, the GOAT, did anything like that. So, Sean Payton comes from that Bill Parcells tree. He ain't going to put up with that crap. And listen, Russ needs to be humbled. He needs to toe the line. And, you know, Sean Payton's going to be the guy that's going to do it. So kudos to him.
Yeah, you know, I look at this, and the one thing that I did see that Sean Payton said, though, was, you know, my main goal right now is to help this man, resurrect his career and resurrect his reputation.
But he has no choice. He has no choice.
And
$230 million guaranteed.
he has no choice at all. But that being said, Sean Payton also knows what it's like because he had to do it for 1 year without Drew Brees. And coincidentally,
yeah,
that's when he decided he wanted to step away from the game. You know, you coach 1 year without a franchise quarterback and you're like, wait a minute,
yeah,
I don't know if I want to keep doing this. So he's
right.
Got a quarterback. You know, I did hear that Russell did reach out to Drew Brees you know, pick his brain about what it was like working under Sean Payton and, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, that's a good positive sign. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think as a quarterback, even though sometimes they get too much glory and sometimes too much flack when things don't go well, you can't expect to be a leader of men if you're not willing to, you know, be amongst them. Right, like if you're trying to be elitist, and then expect them to, you know, go to war for you in the same way on the field, like you can't do that. It's not going to work. So, you know, hopefully for Russ, this works out for him, and hopefully, you know, he can recapture some of that because, listen, he throws a good deep ball, and he's a guy that is fun to watch. You know, when he's cooking. But, you know, hopefully this works out for him. But, you know, Sean Payton, like, listen, stop trying to steal all these coaches off this staff. Like, leave Ronald Curry alone. Leave Zach Street. Leave these guys alone, man. Like, you had a chance to coach with all these guys, and you walked away. So stop poaching all of our coaches, man. Like, look, Go find your own, bro. Like, that's bothering me.
And you took it personally, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I'm taking it personal. Leave the coaches alone. And then now Dennis Allen, he had this guy work under him in Oakland, and now he has got Joe Woods to be the defensive coordinator. And what, he was at Cleveland the last couple of years. Not really, you know, a team that at times, like, they kind of recover late, but they end up getting gassed a lot early in games. And I'm just like, yo, Dennis Allen, are you really trying to win? Or are you just trying to be comfortable? I don't really understand what's going on here. To me, I would have tried to talk to Brian Flores. I would have tried to talk to your boy from Wilkes. There are a lot of different guys that I would have talked to and tried to get before I hired Joe Woods as my defensive coordinator. You know, we got to get Joe Woods to run our defense. Had no winning team ever in the history of the NFL. So hopefully this will work out better than I think. But, yeah, that's just my little rant about I agree with you on the Brian Flores hire in Minnesota. I wish the Saints could have done something else. Now, I did see in our message group somebody said that Derek Carr is being linked to the Saints. Listen, I'm not surprised.
Do you like
it's
that?
Impossible.
Do you like that?
I think he's better than Andy Dalton.
Okay. Yeah.
I think he's better than Andy Dalton, but do I like it? Not necessarily. What do you have to give up? Because at the end of the day, they can release him, and then he has a chance to go where he wants to go. But it's like, I don't really like the idea of giving up draft capital or whatever for a guy that's this long in the tooth. If he ends up going there, then ask me that again, you know, once we see what the price is, and I'll have a better answer for you.
Honestly, to me, I think Derek Carr should go to New York to the Jets. I think Aaron Rodgers should go to the Raiders, and I think the Saints should go into the draft.
I think if he's there, and I could be wrong, but I still think if he's there, the Saints may look at a guy like Max Duggar from TCU, or maybe even Hendon Hooker, the kid from Tennessee.
Hooker's good. I honestly think who's the kid that everybody's talking about? Is it the kid from Kentucky? I don't know which one.
I would much rather have Hendon Hooker than Will Levis any day of the week. Any day of the week.
Yeah.
I would much rather have Hendon Hooker than Will Levis for sure. You know, we only got a couple minutes left, so the only other thing I was going to mention, and we'll have to save this for later, but the two prize freshman recruits starting in college, Nico, I'm not even going to attempt his last name, at Tennessee, and Arch Manning at Texas, which one plays sooner. That's going to be interesting to see how that rounds out. But Barry, we got a couple minutes left, man, before we get ready to shut this thing down. So I'm going to ask you to give me any whatever you want to throw out there, plugs, close out, anything you got before we shut the door here at the NFL Free for All.
Listen, a lot of fun, man. I enjoyed the Pro Bowl weekend. I thought it was a good switch. I like the flag football. Some of the other contests I could do without. Some of them were pretty cool. Some of them, like, man, it was actually fun watching it with the kids. They actually liked it. But the flag football I thought was a hit. So I hope they stick with that. You know, get to this website, you know, blogs and stuff. Get, you know, support us. Shout out to PHI Apparel. Shout out to our friend of the program, Adriana Alafola, did the show with me last week. So doing a lot of big things. Call us cookout tomorrow. We got a lot to talk about. Peace.
Roundtable, Gumbo, Roundtable on Thursday nights and time of Sunday morning brunch on Sundays. Check out the Clubhouse, Barbershop on Clubhouse, man. And listen, bro, laissez les bon temps rouler. I got to give you that on the way out. And as the homie TP always says, bro, tell a friend to tell a friend. It is the chefs again. And if they don't know, Barry, now they know, bro. We out of here. Thanks for doing it.
Sports City, Chefs, Chefs, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs, Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs, Sports City.
city, sports city. Kaboom, sports city chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, bloom like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the sports city chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports city, chef. Chef, sports city, chef, yeah, Cabin, Taj,
woo, Connecticut,